Welcome back out to the Shield Armory. I'm here at the table with Chaplain Potter and Chaplain Stevenson. I'm Chaplain Hughes, and we're so glad that you are back with us. Last week, we were talking about our trip to D.C., fellas, to Police Week. Mm-hmm. It was fun to be able to share that experience with everybody. I know it's not our typical podcast style as far as the things we share about a lot, but I did think it was fun to be able to share with people about our experience about police. We got to think that's important, too.
Absolutely. Just a little way that we can draw people's attention to something that is so important to the families, the survivor families of the fallen officers. And again, as Gareth was saying last week, it would be fantastic if every officer had the opportunity at some point during their career to get up there and take part in that. But we've got some good stuff today we need to hit on. So
yep. Yeah, well, today we're diving into something that all three of us are familiar with, and a lot of people I know listening are familiar with, and then other ones are preparing for this stage of life that we're going to talk about today that's coming up in their future, possibly. We're going to talk about parenting and talk about what it's like raising all those little wild kids that run around our house and tear everything up and keep us up at night and need a bottle or scream, having nightmares or all that crazy stuff that we know what happens. We've talked about a lot, the three of us, with our ages, because we're all 10 years apart. You know, Gareth's 10 years on the south side, Darren, you're 10 years on the north side. And so our kids are in different stages of life, which is fun.
So, it really is. It's pretty amazing to think about. I have twin daughters that turn 25 next week, which was pretty amazing. And so the things I'm dealing with now is my daughters are grown, finished with college, they're married, and yet we're still very much involved in their lives, in a different way. But it's pretty wild to think how quickly we got to this point. And then I look at you other guys still having children at home. And they, as you pointed out, Adam, at different stages, it's pretty cool.
I just had my youngest, their preschool graduation yesterday.
Wow. So when we moved to the Roanoke Salem area, my youngest was going into preschool. And so now my oldest is currently just finishing up her freshman year of high school, which is crazy. First year of high school done for her, first year of middle school done for my youngest. So it's a weird time. It's a weird as a parent when they're having these first, but then they're finishing the first. So it's been interesting for me, for sure.
Yeah, my daughters were 9 years old when I started volunteering with the Roanoke City Police as a chaplain.
Wow, that's crazy.
And they're going to be 25.
That's really crazy. Wow. And they're both married now and, doing life as a family in their own now, which is cool.
Absolutely. And there's a big move taking place in about a week and a half where my daughter that's living outside of Richmond is moving down to Greenville, South Carolina. Going to be 10 minutes apart from her twin sister because they talk like an hour and a half every night.
Holy cow.
Now they're going to live 10 minutes apart. But again, as a parent, I continue to speak into their lives. I'm like, hey, you're married. Don't forget your husbands.
Yeah,
like,
their husbands are doomed now. They thought
careful,
that was bad before.
Okay?
Yeah.
You know?
Man, those poor fellas are going to be ganged up on.
It's bad, man. Wow. It's going to be real bad. So I tell you what, let's jump into today. Let's talk about, we're going to talk about this parenting thing, and I don't know that we're going to get all of this in on one episode. We're going to do our best to see what all we can fit in here, because there's a lot on our agenda to talk about in this realm. And if you're a parent and are listening, then you know that is the case. You know that is very true. No matter the age, there's a lot to work with and explore through and to talk through and all those different things when you're a parent. And so we want to jump into that today and kind of talk about that thing. And so we're going to start in the very beginning, in the very early years. Man, when you're preparing that lane of parenting and getting ready for those baby years and those toddler years, especially if you haven't had kids, it's pretty terrifying. That you get ready to bring that little human into the world, and it's your job to keep it alive.
Yeah. I remember driving home in my truck with Grayson and going, are they sure that we can do this? Like, is there a number I can call? Like, if it's going bad or like what's, and just worked out.
Yeah. We found out at the 8-week ultrasound, we were having twins, and I'll never forget Melanie, her jaw when they turned the monitor around from the ultrasound, and plain as day, there's two kidney beans there. And congratulations, you're having twins. And my wife's jaw hit the floor, and she looked at me, and she said, what have you done to me? I was like, you're welcome. But no, really, I just started laughing because, and I just looked at my wife. I said, look, if God has blessed us with twins, he's going to bless us with everything that we need to take care of these babies. I was very confident then. Then after my babies were born, they were 5 weeks early, and I remember giving my my daughter Caitlin a bath for the first time in the hospital while she's still in the NICU, and you know they were 3 pounds 14 ounces, 4 pounds 1 ounce when they were born. And,
wow!
And I was terrified. I was going to drop this little baby, and my wife is just eating this up. She's like, "Oh, I've been playing with baby dolls my whole life. I have 3 little sisters and all this stuff." And I'm going, "I've never held anything so delicate in my life. I am terrified that I'm going to drop this baby." And the adventure began.
Yep.
Yeah, man, that's crazy. I wouldn't know what to do with like 3 and 4 pound babies. Mine were both over 9 pounds. So when they were born, they were,
wow, you had toddlers.
Yeah. They were big as babies. And so, which is funny, 'cause when you look, especially, look at my oldest one now, as she's shot up in height, you know, it's really changed, the dynamic for her. And so like thinking that she was 9 pounds when she was born is kind of funny looking back at it now, 'cause she doesn't look like she would have been a 9 pound baby. Now, because as she's gotten taller, she's thinned out big time, and it's just crazy. But it's parenting is an interesting animal for sure. You know, I feel like with my two, like I've had to even learn how to parent differently because their personalities are so different. You know, but those early years are so important, so important.
Absolutely.
I read a parenting book one time. It was a book about raising daughters, and in that book that guy said 80% of the foundations of life are learned before the age of 5.
Yep.
That's a lot. Now you grow on all that foundation, but the foundation of life of a person's life, 80% of what they learn for their life, the foundation of that is drawn before the age of 5. That is huge.
It absolutely is. And it's interesting. I mentioned to my wife that we're going to be doing this episode, and I'm like, and for those of you who don't know, my wife is a career kindergarten teacher. Absolutely loves kids. She was born to be a teacher. She was born to be a mom. Like she is the oldest of 4 girls and taught. She came home from school and taught her little sisters everything that she had learned. So her little sisters all thrived all the way through school because of what she taught them when she got home from school growing up. Phenomenal with young children. And she just looked at me and she said, please, please, please drive home the point that those first few years are so crucial, and you have to be intentional, you have to be present, and you have to take advantage of every moment that you have with the children in those early years.
Yeah, every moment that you're raising those kids, especially early on, everything they learn, they're learning from you, because everything is new to them, right? It's kind of like trying, you know, people always talk about, well, kids are born inherently like good. I'm like, family, your kid didn't try to stick a fork in the electrical socket. You know, it's like, are you kidding me? Like I had to teach a kid to stop trying to eat the dog's food. You know, it's like you don't eat the dog's food, and you don't stick a knife in the electrical socket in the wall.
Well, and do you have to teach a child to pit one parent against the other and that kind of thing? Oh, they, man. And they do that at an early age, yeah. Long, yep, before they, sure, go to school.
Yep.
Yeah. We look at kids as being innocent, and there's an aspect of, oh, they're young children and that kind of thing. But to be sure, they were born tainted. They were born sinful, as everyone else.
Yep.
And once you become a parent, and if you're honest, you know that's true.
Yeah, for sure.
It kind of brings us to the point that God has designed this whole thing. So this is a clear design from God that there are kids and then there are parents. In that design, parents carry responsibility for their offspring. By and large, we are seeing in society that parents are beginning to hand that to somebody else or just completely negate it. And you have frequently small adolescent children weighing below 50 pounds that are telling adults what to do. That is a role reversal that is not operating how God has designed that. So probably the first thing we want to say is that our calling as parents, our design, what we're supposed to do is we're supposed to train, equip, and disciple our kids.
Absolutely.
That's what we're supposed to do. When we get to heaven, there will be an accountability for what we have done or not done with our kids. That is 100% a design from God.
I have a friend that's recently said to me, whose kids are now like post high school, so like college age, young adult, and now one has a family. And he said to me when we were having a conversation about our kids just recently, and he said, you know, when my kids were younger, I was able to control that environment. I was able to lead them and guide them. He said, but now, he said, I learned that really, that was not my time to be their friend. It was not my time to let them tell me what was going to happen. But now I'm turning into more of an advisor role where now they're starting their own families and that kind of thing. And so he said, he was talking about, he actually used the same terms you did. He said, my calling as a parent, I'm learning that it changes in seasons, but in the early on, it was so important that I had to try to teach them right from wrong and about the Lord and about the ways they should live and those kind of things. But now I'm having to learn to step back a little bit because now again, they're getting married and they're starting their own families. And he said, and that's been hard because I'm learning that again, that calling evolves as my kid gets older.
Mm-hmm. It is so very true. And having been through, you know, all of those stages and having been in that stage that your friend is now for the last few years, for me and my wife, that's what's so challenging about this whole parenting thing. It's constantly changing, with the different seasons or stages along the way. But we definitely want to encourage each parent that's listening to this to understand that there's no such thing as neutral time with your kids. Doesn't mean that there's not times where you're more relaxed than other times and that kind of thing. I'm not saying that. What I'm saying is every interaction you have with your child, every moment that you are around your child, you are molding, shaping, speaking into your child's life one way or the other, for good or for bad, better or for worse. There's no such thing as neutral. So be mindful with your actions, with your time, your words, to be intentional, because everything you do is going to have an impact on your children.
I think by and large, families and parents do not understand the power that they have as the parent unit. There's a pretty extensive study that was done on kids, and they followed them from birth all the way into career and then retirement. I mean, it was an extensive study, and they begin to ask them and see throughout their life, why are you making the decisions you're making? Why are you doing what you're doing? Where did you get that value from? And all of those kids, you can draw a line straight back to, I saw mom and dad do this. Mm-hmm. Not, I read in a book. Not, I experienced at church. I heard on a podcast. For better or for worse, they saw mom and dad do it.
That's right.
So that's pretty terrifying in some regards.
Yeah, it is. Yeah.
But you're like, man, but what if we leverage that?
Yep.
What if our kids saw us be intentional about our time, to be intentional about our words, to be intentional about our apologies.
Yeah.
Our kids don't need to see perfect parents because the world's not perfect and they're not going to be perfect. What they need to see us is navigating that with grace, with understanding, with intentionality. And our honestly, kids, you can watch them. My wife and I are in leadership at our church in the kids area. She's the children's director, and I'm the family life pastor. And oftentimes you will see kids that come in, and it is as if they're insecure. because they don't have someone guiding and directing them. And it almost is unfair to the child. The parents do a decent job at loving them, I would say. They provide their needs. They're showered. They have cool toys. They take them on vacation. They go to school. All those boxes are checked, but they're not parenting them. They're not guiding. They're not directing them.
You know, I think the word that we haven't brought up yet that you are just alluding to is boundaries.
Yep.
Children thrive when they have boundaries. And if we do not have those boundaries in place for our children, it will show up in their behavior early on, and it'll continue. So setting boundaries, having consequences, you know, and you know, all those things are so vital at an early age, and then all the way through. Now that can change, and it will as they grow in the different seasons and stages of life. But children thrive on boundaries. So if we really genuinely love our children and are parenting with that big picture in mind, we're gonna have boundaries.
Yeah. There's an interesting study I learned about when I was in college in one of my psychology classes. And there was a big move, as you were just saying, the term is tabula rasa. You're born with a blank sheet of paper, just completely nothing on it. And our society or whatever corrupts us. We're not inherently born evil. That is not what we believe, and that is not what we see. And so with that move, what they were saying is how our environment with our kids will dictate where they end up in later on in life, not what they see their parents do, not what their upbringing is, what their foundation is. So one school district said, if that study is correct, if our environment shapes our kids, the playgrounds are like prisons. They have fences. They're not allowed to go outside of them. And so they removed all the fences from the playgrounds.
Hmm. Wow.
My wife is a teacher as well. And I think, poor teachers. The first day that they did this, the superintendents came to watch what happened. And they're thinking in their mindset, man, like, we have freed the kids. We've given them an environment where they can play. They can be safe. They don't have to. We're not preparing them for prison or life in captivity, if you will. What the superintendents found is the kids huddled underneath the playset. And they didn't know what to do. There was no boundaries. It wigged them out.
Wow.
Now, we all know as parents that wouldn't last for long. Yeah. They'd be frolicking out to Eastern Missouri if you're not careful. But kids, like you were saying, they thrive in that. So the school district had to actually go back and build all these fences again. It's just crazy to think that people don't understand that. But our kids are looking for leadership. I often find in kids ministry, there's 30-some kids in a room. And what they'll come in and ask, and I had an old coach tell me this when I used to teach swim lessons. He said, a child walks through the room and asks two questions. Who's in charge and how far can I push them? Immediately, every threshold, who's in charge, how far can I push them? And when they figure that out, they'll calm down. And go, all right, you're in charge. I know where the boundaries are at. And that, it was 100% wisdom. I watch kids walk through the room, and I'll have to say to them, who's in charge of this room? And they'll squint their eyes. You're four. You forgot to wipe your tail yesterday. Like, you were not in charge of this room.
You say that?
I am sorry. Well, it's an abbreviated version.
Okay.
Obviously. But... want to be gentle, obviously, not to hurt and wound the kids in their gentle state. But no, desperately, kids need us to guide and direct them. And as parents, I am seeing more and more in my world where parents are refusing to do that. Yeah. They're refusing to provide that correction. And I will watch kids, again, tell an adult what to do, and the adult will listen.
Just hearing you say
that.
I was going
to say, you were cringing over there when you said that.
That just crawls all over me. Mm-hmm. I was just at a school this morning. Scarlett and I went to a local school to read to some classes. And I don't know what the school resource officer Well, I guess I do know what she thinks of my reading, because after the first class, I read the book in the first class. She's like, if you'd like, I can read in the next class. And she was outstanding. She, like, you can tell she's an SRO at an elementary school. So she read in all the rest of the classes. She refused to turn the book back over to me. So apparently I didn't do so good with my reading. But there's a couple times, you know, a child in a class was started to want to tell me what I was going to do with Scarlet. And I was just, you know, it evoked some things in me, but I kept smiling and
it evoked things.
We focused on Scarlet and had her do all of her commands and that kind of thing. And we worked through it, but boy, I would love to talk with that child or those children's parents for a few minutes.
I literally had a mom come to me a couple weeks ago and was talking about this very subject. And to be very honest, she is a single mom. So she has a very hard, and I don't know her story. I don't know if it was self-inflicted or if she's completely a victim to that. Regardless of the fact, today she's a single mom, mm-hmm. and that's a hard place to be. And she was explaining that her 8-year-old, hear this, her 8-year-old was assaulting her and telling her what to do.
Poor Darren, I wish you guys could see his face right now.
And it's very easy to say, like, you sorry lady, but she's made this monster, and yeah. now she's going, I've messed up.
Yep.
That is actually sad. So she's saying, how do I tell my child no? How do I tell my child? Mm-hmm. And then my brain turned from like angry and like, how does this happen, to she's asking for help.
Yep.
And so if you're listening to this and you're going, wow, I have X number of kids, I have different stages, and whatever stage you're in, whether it's you're putting your kid in a car seat and the kid's bucking at you, or you have a rebellious 18-year-old or 16-year-old, just know that there are people here that understand, that hear you, and we want to give you some tools to be able to navigate that. The first step I always tell parents is you got to realize your role in the situation. Mm-hmm. You are not called to be their friend. You are not called to love your kids. What you are called to do is equip them and disciple them. And so I was able to tell this mom, what you're teaching that child is that every adult is her floor mat. And I said, I'm going to be very honest. She will end up in the back of a patrol car one day and I'll get to talk to her. That's what that'll happen. So you've got to correct that now.
And the good news is that if you, maybe you're thinking, well, I probably haven't done the best at setting boundaries. I haven't done the best, at establishing whose home it is and that kind of thing. You can turn things around. You absolutely can turn things around. And, will it be challenging if you have a 6-year-old and maybe you have allowed the 6-year-old to kind of call the shots and they are, you know, you're preparing a meal for your family and your 6-year-old is telling you what they're going to eat for supper and what you are going to prepare for supper for them. And you've been doing that their entire life. And so now you got a 6-year-old who only is going to eat mac and cheese and chicken nuggets or hot dogs. And all of a sudden you start saying, well, you know, that's not the way life works. You're going to eat what I'm serving you. If you start making that change in your home, just know they're going to buck, they're going to challenge, they're going to push, but you just need to be that mighty oak, stand your ground. And if you do that, as my wife sometimes says, you have to be stubborn one more minute than your child. When you start getting those victories, when you start establishing more boundaries, and then you stick to your guns, you'll be surprised at how quickly you can right the ship and start turning things around.
One funny story about stubborn kids. Would you guys say that having a stubborn child is a good thing?
Absolutely.
I think it definitely can be, for sure.
I'm glad you answered that, because this next statement, which was going to contradict what you guys were saying, read a book about child rearing, and it talked a little bit about breaking horses, and I worked on a farm for a while, and we had horses, so it was like, ooh, that's awesome. As like an authoritative father, I was going to read this book about breaking horses and relate that to my kids. Come to find out, the first chapter of that book popped me on the nose so hard. What it explained was, you don't actually break the spirit of a horse. You don't take a horse and break it truly and then ride it. You want the most spirited, wild horse you can ever get a hold of, but you want to be able to bridle it, and it needs to be under submission. Mm-hmm. If you break it, it becomes a mule. That's it. And so I was thinking about that, and I was going, man, like, how do I do that? And one of my kids at that time was really in a stubborn streak. And she walked in, you know, the story, obviously. She walked into the kitchen, and I think she was about 2 years old at the time, looking real cute, looked at me and said, "Daddy, make me juice."
Oh boy.
And I was like, "No, ma'am. You say please." And she said, "No, I will not." And everybody listening, I'm sure you've been there, but like, I felt,
check it out, Dan.
I felt weightless. I felt angry. I started to see noises. How did we arrive at a 30-pound girl who's still barely out of diapers telling an adult male what to do? Where did that come from? And how does that translate to any other area in life?
Born innocent.
Yeah, right. So instead of, and this is a point for parents, if you're looking at your kids and you're going, man, I got to correct some of this, don't wage war on your kids. They are kids, and they're doing exactly what you've trained them to do. So don't go home and wave the sword around and say, here I am, hear me roar. Pick one thing.
That's right.
Be consistent about it. Don't upset the apple cart. You've created the system for the kids. They're just operating what you did. So with my little girl, I said, we will not do that. And I will not give you juice until you say please. How long do you think it took her?
I bet it wasn't long. But by looking on your face, I'm guessing I'm wrong.
It was 2.5 days.
Holy smokes.
So we went through breakfast, lunch, and dinner, and she would sit at the table and smile at me and eat her food. And I would smile back and hold my cup of water, and I would drink it. And she was digging her heels in. And after reading that book, I thought to myself, I want her to be as stubborn as she possibly can be.
Yep.
When she gets in high school, when a boy says, hey, I want to do this, I want to go a little farther than what you're comfortable with, I want that sister to be able to dig her heels in and say, no, sir. Absolutely. I'm perfectly good with stubborn.
Absolutely.
You will not, at 2 years old, tell an adult male to get you juice now.
Yeah.
Little different. So day two, walked her into the bedroom, and I said, hey, we're done. Look at me in the eyes and say, please. She said, no. So I corrected her. I said, say please. She said, no. I corrected her again. After a couple of times, I walked out, and my wife is sitting in the hallway crying, and because we're now day two into this experience. She's like, dude, I think we just need to give her a little water. And I said, I don't care if she dies of dehydration. We'll put on her tombstone, Daddy won, but we're not doing this. I will not show her that she is more stubborn than me. And half a day later, I was sitting on the couch, and she walked into me, and she said, Daddy, may I please have juice? Yes, ma'am, you can. No big deals, no talk. You did exactly what I asked. And I got her juice, and I gave it to her, and I said, I love you, and I kissed her on the cheek. There did not have to be a battle royale.
But that's right.
You have to set a standard, and you have to live up to that. I do tell parents oftentimes, if you are, do not pick a battle if you're not going to win it.
Correct.
If you're looking at it and going, I don't want to fight that. My advice?
Don't fight it.
Don't do it.
Yep.
Because you're going to teach your kid, frankly, that you can be beaten. And it's actually unfair to kids. If you think about it, they have these parents that are supposed to be their guiding directors, their stability through life. And the only time that that I see parents punished these days is when the parents get mad, when they're tired, when they're at the end of their rope. Well, he's just done this a dozen times. Well, how is the 12th time different than the first time?
Yeah.
The 12th time, you're mad as a hornet. And so what you teach that kid is, ooh, I got to watch you out for when dad's in a bad mood because now I have to listen. That's not fair to them. So be, please, please be consistent. Take a look at your life and the way you're parenting. Are the things you're saying, are you actually doing them? Are you being consistent? They desire that. They need that.
Now that you brought that up, I don't guess we really talked about this earlier, but if both parents are involved, we're not talking about a single parent situation here. Boy, do mom and dad need to be in the same page?
Oh, man. Right? So you're true.
Talk about being consistent.
Yep.
There needs to be consistency between how mom and dad are, both mom and dad are interacting with the children, with that child. We can't, if one parent or the other gives in and kind of bends the rules a little bit, you've just established something that's going, you're going to regret.
You're training a manipulator is what you're doing.
Absolutely. Very well said.
You're training. You're sending them to the school 101 of how to manipulate people.
Yep.
And it's dangerous. Our actions have consequences. Parenting is a thousandfold.
Yep.
So that's terrifying again, in some regards. You may be listening going, sweet mercy, I've messed up. Well, you leverage that on the other side of the fence. There's a lot of power in good, well-centered parenting. Press into it. Do it. You have the opportunity before you to create warriors that will inherit this insane world that we live in today. And I want my kids. There's a book that me and my wife have read, and we actually give it to every at our church, every child that is born and they want to dedicate their kid. We give them this book. It's called 50 Things. If you're listening, reach out through our social media and I'll send you a link to it. But the basic premise is, as my kid exits the house, here are 50 things that I want them to know. That way, when they leave, I can think in my mind, to the best of my ability, I have equipped them to be able to handle life. I think you were telling us a story about feeling when your kids are about to exit the house. You want to tell that?
Oh, well, you know, again, I'm a little bit further down this parenting road than my other two chaplains here. And I'm going to try to do this without crying. They pick on me all the time because my eyes leak, especially, you know, I'd love to say it was pollen, but it's not. When you start taking a look at how little time you actually have with your children, and maybe we can take more of a look at that, but it's, I'll never forget when my daughters, you know, they're, you know, somewhere around their second year of high school. And I'm going, I only have like 3 spring breaks left. I've got 3 Christmas breaks. God, have I done enough to speak into my daughter's lives here? You know, have I prepared them well? Are they equipped? And I'm not a perfect parent by any stretch. And there's things I could have done better, should have done better, and all that kind of thing. All that said, I'm a pretty good dad. Like I my wife and I have been very intentional. We were very intentional with our children, how we raised them and so forth. And yet, when it came down to those last 2 or 3 years of high school, it was terrifying to think that they're going to be adults. Have I really equipped them and given them a strong enough foundation? And to finish that, I will say, thankfully, by the grace of God, truly, my daughters have done extremely well. And for me, it's very important for me, as a Jesus follower, as a Christian, that my daughter stayed in the faith. Those are decisions they had to make. but they have stayed in the faith. They married men who have stayed in the faith, who are Christians. They're both couples are very actively involved in their congregations. And I know my one daughter, I mentioned she's moving. I think there's at least a possibility that those two couples will end up at the same church. And I know that pastor is just chomping at the bit to have, you know, two solid couples involved in their congregation. And that excites me as their dad. But hear me when I say the time goes so, so quickly.
So my wife and I are currently, we're in a small group. We were talking a little bit about this earlier before we got started, and we meet every other Saturday night. And this, the Bible study series we're doing right now is called The Art of Parenting by Family Life. And one of the things that study is pushing home every week is that we're they refer to it as we're raising arrows. And someone who makes arrows for a bow and arrow, like especially if they make them by hand, it's very intricately done. Every piece is done with a certain reason. The shaft itself is bored a certain way. The end is put in a certain way. The pieces back towards the back are put in a certain way. And the reason why is because we're preparing them to launch them out when they're older, but we don't launch them until it's time. And so little by little, we're intricately doing all the things that need to have happen. And, you know, when we were talking about, as you guys were kind of talking about the things with the kids, running the show and the issues and different things like that. Then one of the things that I remember them saying in that study early on was, as parents, we have to decide when we're dealing with our kids in those tense moments. Are we dealing with a personality issue or are we dealing with a sin issue? Because there's two very different ways that we can respond when we're dealing with issues with our kids, and it's that the way that that is determined is us as a parent. And sometimes we have to make it quickly on the fly, and sometimes we don't get it right. But am I dealing with the fact that this is just a personality issue in my kid that we're not seeing eye to eye, or is this really like a disobedience issue? Is this really a sin issue? And all of that is, and the way we respond to that, we raise our kids. Darren, you said before we started this episode, you made the comment, and we even wrote it on the board getting ready for this episode, was we have to parent with the big picture in mind. Because of all of these things, no matter how our kids respond when they're younger, what type of people are they going to be as they get older? When you're talking about your daughters now, like the state of the place in life that they're in now, what type of people do we want them to be when they're older? I think I was sharing with you guys a week or two ago, there's a family in mine and my wife's life, and we had the chance to be both of their daughters. I was their youth pastor for both of their daughters, and they were a couple of years apart. And I remember when they were going through school, and both of their daughters played travel sports. And again, I think I even mentioned this on a previous episode, but I don't have a problem with sport. I love sports. I'm a sports junkie and those kind of things. But they did like year round. And they would take their kids out of the church, and they were out of the church, and out of the church, and out of the church. And then now their kids are not involved in church at all. A couple of years ago, they came to us and said, what did we go wrong? Well, the example that you led, because Gareth, you were talking about, we set the example. The example that you led all those years now has come to fruition. Now that we were telling you back then, like, you've got to make sure your girls see that that is a priority, you know? So it's just like anything else. So they saw it as a non-priority. They only had to be there when they weren't playing sports. So now it's not a big deal that they're not there at all. I saw a social media post just the other day that said, it was talking about the generations of kids in a family. And it says, like, grandfather sold out to Jesus. Talking about the way the parents parent their kids as they come down. It says, grandfather sold out to Jesus. Dad, Jesus is his priority. Son, Jesus is a priority when I don't have something else going on. Grandson was, who is Jesus? You know, it was talking about, and again, that made me think when we were talking about this, because again, everything that we do, the way that we respond to our kids, the way we raise our kids, the things that we put out in front of them, all of that stuff, the way we lead, the way that we set things in motion for them, determine is a great piece of who they turn out to be. Now, there are kids who are found in bad situations or whatever, and they decide, I'm not going to be those people or whatever. But a large part of who our kids turn out to be is exactly what we're talking about at the table, is the example and leadership that we set in their life.
That was a great example of, you know, this saying that I heard many years ago, what one generation tolerates, the next will embrace. because that one generation tolerated sports taking a higher position in that home than their commitment to the local church and that local body, then that next generation didn't have use for that local church, that local body, that commitment. And you can see that played out in a number of different ways. But what I guess one of the things that I get most concerned about is when I see people who parents who display such selfish behavior or self-centered behavior that it's almost like they want, and I guess it was alluded to earlier, maybe even said earlier in this podcast, someone else to really shape their children or, you know, they're going to provide the basics. They're going to see that they have a roof over their heads and things like that, but they don't want to take the time, invest the time and take away from their own lives and their own wants and their own needs to invest in their children. They want somebody else to do that. And it's like, that's not being a parent. Like giving birth and providing the most basic needs for children, that's not parenting. And I dare say if we applied the same approach to taking care of a puppy as some people do their children, we would have way more problems with dogs than we already do.
Yep.
Like nobody would bring a puppy into their home and say, well, I'm just going to let this puppy discover what it wants to do and figure things out on its own. Like we wouldn't do that, but we're doing it with our kids.
Yeah.
Like that's a problem. And I can tell you as the husband of a school teacher who's been teaching for decades, there's been an absolute shift over these, you know, last number of years. Talk to any teacher who's been on the job for 20, 30 years. The amount of work, the amount of the expectations put on teachers now to do things for students and to step into roles that should be filled, things that should be taken care of by parents. Teachers are having to step up and give shape to more of these things when they need to just be teaching. You know, the academics and things and I don't get me wrong. There's other things that are taught in the classroom and stuff like that. As far as we want our teachers to display good character and love their students and that kind of thing. I'm not saying it just needs to be a cold academic environment, but my wife, no matter how loving of a teacher she is, she's not those students' mother.
Correct.
Certainly not their father. We need moms and dads to step up and take seriously this role of speaking into their kids' lives.
And I think, Gareth, you said earlier, being a parent is a calling, and that we're supposed to equip our kids, disciple our kids. And so, Darren, if we're going to accomplish the things that you're talking about, and Gareth, if we're gonna step into that calling, I think the thing that we've got to realize is, as parents, we've got to be present parents in our kids' lives. We can't just hand them a phone or hand them an iPad and let that take up their time. We can't just do what we want to do and expect them to be on their own the whole time they're at home. We can't just let our kids retreat in their rooms and just do whatever they want to do for hours on end. We've got to be intentional in being present parents. And that means not just a physical body, but mentally, emotionally, the whole nine yards. We have got to be present in our kids' lives. That is the only way this works.
Gareth, what were you saying before we started this this episode? What were you talking? You had mentioned the number of weekends. You had kind of figured out the number of weekends that we as parents have with our children.
Yeah, kind of just hit me. Was in a meeting and they were saying, "Hey, if we had our wishes, you would do this every single Saturday, 52 weeks a year." And I immediately went, "Wow, that's a lot." And then I added up how many Saturdays I have left with Grayson. And that was, I have a couple hundred Saturdays left with my oldest child. And then I zoomed out and I'll round just a little bit, but by the time our kids, from when they're born till the time they leave the house, there's around 1,000 Saturdays or 1,000 weekend opportunities. We'll put it that way. If I start handing off, if I had $1,000 and you were like, hey, can I have a dollar of that? Yeah, it's no big deal. I give you one here, give you one there, one there, one there. And that's what happens. And right now I'm sitting at, man, I only have a couple hundred left. And my child's 9. So I'm halfway through this. What am I doing with those Saturdays? Am I spending them working a side job? Am I spending them allowing people to come over and we love on them? It has made me think, you know what? I probably don't want to do that with my couple hundred Saturdays. I probably don't want to give that away. I want to do something with Grayson to help equip him. I don't know, just kind of a perspective for parents that hit me this week.
Yeah, and we were talking about, you know, many of you who are listening are working in the law enforcement world, that with the shift work and that kind of thing, that you're working a couple of weekends a month.
By design, you're working every other almost.
Yeah. So, you know, you're down to 500 out the gate, 500 weekends. So
be intentional.
Be intentional with what you have to work with. And listen, our children need to see us working. They need to see us providing. They need, you know, there's the answer is not for you to stop working and just stay at home and hang out with your kids. Like that's not good parenting either. Right. Everything we do is modeling, before kids, you know, what life is about. But what we're just trying to draw to your attention is, again, how precious little time you really have to shape and speak into your children's lives. I always felt like, as a husband, that the best thing I could do for my children is to model before them, first of all, you know, you'd expect me, I'm a Christian minister, I'm a Christian chaplain, you expect me to say this, so I'm going to go ahead and say it. I want to model before them, first and foremost, that my life is centered around Jesus Christ, first and foremost. But the second thing I wanted to model and make clear to my children is what it is to be a godly husband, for my wife and I to model before them what a solid, wholesome marriage looks like. I wanted to model that before them. And so, yes, I did nurture. I've nurtured my wife along the way. My children needed to know how important my marriage is. Because guess what? My children are out of the house. My wife is not. She's still there.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Right. So I didn't want to wake up like 18 years after I had my daughters and all of a sudden realize that, oh, who's this woman that's in my house? Mm. Like, so we stayed in touch, right? All through those years. And, you know, I say it's kind of, you know, we kind of smile at that, but I see some of the things I see, one of the things I get concerned about is when I see parents totally living for their kids and focusing their whole lives around their kids. They're the focus. They're the center. It's not their faith. It's not their marriages. They're centering everything around the children, and they forget about that marriage. So we have to exercise some discernment and good wisdom here along the way too, to nurture that marriage. So don't forget that.
Well, and you said something a minute ago. I want to tie all that you said into this. You said your kids need to see you work. In this line of work in particular, there's a lot of overtime. Your kids need to see you work, but your kids need to see you pick your your kids over your job. They need to see, and I get there are times we all need to, something happens and we need the extra money. Like, I'm not saying that there isn't time for that, but I am saying, like, it can be real easy for overtime to take away those every other weekends that we do have off, that kind of thing, you know, and those extra assignments and the extra games and the extra this and the extra that. That stuff's always going to be there. They'll be there after your kids are out of the house, you know. And again, going back to what you said about being married, that your kids need to see you choose their mom or dad before them. You know, we need to set that up. I'll never forget several years ago, I've owned a side business for a number of years. I own a Christian DJ and a videography business, and did a lot of weddings over the years, both shooting theatrical videos and DJing weddings and stuff. And I'll never forget, I think it was 2 years ago, I was pretty busy with the video side of things, and takes up, you're pretty much gone on Saturdays with that, you know. And my now getting ready to turn 12-year-old, she would have been 10 then. She, maybe even 9, depending on what part of that year it was. But we were sitting at the dining room table one day, and I was talking about, hey, I've got this wedding. I got to go to this place, this wedding on Saturday. And she looked up at me, and it was my wife and me and my oldest daughter and her. And she said, Dad, do you have to keep doing that? And I said, what do you mean? And she said, we don't ever get to spend Saturday with you. We're in school all week, and we don't ever get to see you on Saturdays because you're always going to a wedding. And after that season, I stopped booking Saturdays. So now, like, I've just gotten to where the extra money was nice, and it was taking care of a lot of things that we didn't have the other money from. But now, like, occasionally I'll do one for somebody I know. Like, I don't advertise, I don't book, I don't do anything like that. I just, if I have some friends or family, just because that was, God used her to speak into my life in that moment to say, this can wait till later.
Yep. Yeah. At what cost?
Yes, exactly.
At what cost? Yeah. I can do side work. I can build houses. Yep. I can, in my world with construction, I can do that to support my family.
Yep.
But at what cost?
Maybe that's why parenting was easier for me, because I have no discernible skill outside of ministry. So, like, I can't build anything. I can't DJ. I can't. So it was easier for me to spend time with my daughters.
What you did have, though, all jokes aside, is you love people well and you disciple people well. So you had to say no. And I've heard you talk about this. You've had to say, no, I can't do that right now. I'm doing this with my family. And so they saw, what you don't know is several years ago, I went through a pretty rough time in ministry, and I was kind of doing some soul searching and trying to reorient myself. And Darren was helping me walk through that, and he gave me the number of his girls. And he said, you need to make sure you're parenting well while you're doing ministry. Why don't you call my girls and ask what I did well and what I did not do well? That's a pretty bold move.
Yeah.
And so I will forever remember, I was actually on a sabbatical at the time. I'd stepped away from church for a couple of weeks, and I remember sitting, honestly, at the beach on a Zoom call, and I asked them a bunch of questions. And I would ask, what did your dad do well? What did he not do well? What would you say to me? And one of the things they mentioned was, dad was consistent. He did things that hit with call outs and in ministry. It is much like law enforcement, and with a drop of a hat, your day can change. Somebody's worst day is your job, and they don't plan their worst days. So you do have to shepherd and walk with people through stuff in the middle of the night. But what your girls kept saying was, he would either make up that time and say, hey, I missed blank, this is a substitute for that, which means you were intentional about it. Or you would say, and they would hear you say, thank you for calling me. I'm not able to do that right now. Can you come by tomorrow? And your girls remembered that as a really powerful thing. So you're picking on yourself, but I have a little insider trading info. Turns out you did a pretty decent job.
Well, and I think, too, there's something in that, in the fact that while we were working side jobs, you were given of your time with law enforcement long before Shield was along.
And yeah, so you started thinking about it. I was volunteering 30, 40 hours a month.
Yeah, so I mean, there
for
was
9 years.
Yeah, you know, so while we were making extra money, you were giving yours away for free, and so that says a lot about you too, man, and about the. That's an example in itself to your girls.
Yep. What? It's funny that you say that too. I have a daughter that's. She may very well have an opportunity to make more money and be in a position where, you know, to move up and that kind of thing. But she's already talking with us about, I don't know if I want to step into that role. I don't know if I want to continue where I am necessarily, because there's a lot of hurting people in this world. And I don't know if I want to deal with the more trivial things of life if I can speak into these other situations. And that's my stubborn girl. We were talking about stubborn kids and stuff. I was stubborn as all get out. Maybe we can at another time share those stories. We should have my mother on here one time. That'll change your life.
We should not have my mother on the podcast.
But yeah, I was very stubborn, and I had a stubborn child. And to your point, Gareth, we didn't destroy her.
Nope.
We don't want to break a stubborn child. We just need that stubbornness focused on the right things. We need that in our Christian speak here. We'll say we want that stubbornness sanctified, made holy by a holy God. And thankfully, we see that played out.
Well, I think there's one thing as we're finishing up this episode and bringing this thing to a close. I think there's one overarching statement that needs to be made in reference to everything we said, is that you cannot get these years back that pass by. And so whatever it looks like for you and your family, wherever you are with your kids, or maybe you're listening to this and you don't have kids yet, but you want to have kids someday, wherever you are on that spectrum, one thing that we would say to you is, as three guys who are on different levels of the spectrum and the years when it comes to parenting, is that you can't get the years back that have passed by. So make the most of what you have, do your best, and take some time to talk to some other people who are ahead of you.
Mm-hmm.
And like you call his daughters, I mean, that's a great example. You know, talk to some people who have gone ahead of you. How can you do it best? How can you make the years count? That's the whole point of this episode. How can we do this better? And we're still learning. Even, and I'm sure Darren would say this to you, like even with his girls being out of the house now, he's still learning. How do I be the best dad to them now in this season of their life?
Absolutely.
You know, you don't ever reach a point of perfection with this parenting thing. You're learning the entire time the same way your kids are learning, you know?
Yes.
And so just make the most of the years, whatever season you're in, make the most of that time. Don't waste it. And if you feel like, man, I'm behind, don't live in that. Just start where you are now and move forward. Don't make any excuses. Just keep going.
Absolutely.
So, well, guys, I think that's about all the time we're going to have for today. I hate, because I feel like there's so much more. I think we could probably do this for months, honestly, on this one subject. And who knows? We'll see what next week holds. But we're so glad you guys tuned in with us today. We really hope this was an encouragement to you. We really hope this was something that will help fill your cup. Maybe give you a little of encouragement in the season that you're in with your kids. Or again, maybe if you don't have kids yet, maybe this will encourage you as you're looking to the future of having kids. But if there's anything we can do for you, if we can answer any questions, if we can help in any way, call us, email us, reach out through our social media. We'd be happy to talk with you, happy to try and encourage you more. Otherwise, we look forward to seeing you guys next week.